This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
One of the schools of thought is that you put big-time players around Justin Fields and he's going to get to another level. Mm-hmm. Do you think, I mean, I know you kind of alluded to it, but do you think that way, that you can help make Justin Fields a star?
Yeah, the way that we got me here was to better the franchise. So that's what I'm here to do. I'm going to put my head down and work hard every day and just go from there.
So Ryan Poles had a very candid conversation with Peter King, Football Morning in America. We talked a little bit about it earlier on The Score. We also talked about the conversation that I had with Peter King last night on Football Night in Chicago. It is the all-football show that NBC Sports Chicago does. It's at 6 o'clock. You've seen me on it. You've seen David Haw on it. You've seen Lawrence Holmes. It's a rotating host set, but that makes for a lot of good rotating guests. And Peter King was on last night. We did a big interview, and we didn't get to air it all, but there was something that Peter King told us that he didn't write about in the column, talking about Ryan Poles and the decisions he made and how candid he was talking about the things that the GMs don't tell us. Knowing who you're trading with, knowing who you're making deals with. And this is the part that I think is really valid. So hang with us for this 10-minute portion of conversation between Peter King and me regarding Ryan Poles telling us some stuff that GMs have not said out loud before.
Layla, first of all, thanks for asking to speak to me, and it's good to see you. I guess I would say two things. Number one, so when I talked to Ryan Poles at the scouting combine, I thought there were some reasons why he, in that conversation, he was as open as he was. For instance, in that conversation, he said, essentially, we have a really good offer on the table right now, you know, from a team who we wouldn't name. But he basically said that essentially they have a first round pick, not only in 23 on the table from that team, but also in 24 and 25. And I think Ryan Poles wanted the world to know, listen, if you're going to come into this, come in hot, you know. And I found out after I talked to him at the combine in Indianapolis, because Poles told me this last week, that when I left his hotel room that day, a few minutes later, Scott Fitterer, the general manager of the Carolina Panthers, came in, and that's when they had their first long and serious conversation about the first pick in the draft. And that's when I'm sure that the name of DJ Moore came up, because you know, Layla, that this team had so many holes that I think Ryan Poles was happy if it was going to be an all draft pick trade. But once a team like Carolina got involved with a wide receiver who could be a number one wide receiver, who was signed for 3 years, once that was the team that they were going to go down the road with, I think he thought that I know that they are going to be very eager to get up to the number one pick. So he basically made it known he's not going to do the trade without DJ Moore in it. So I think a lot of things benefited Poles at the time. Then, you know, after the trade goes through and then talking to him just about what exactly happened, I think what he wanted to get across was that essentially you sometimes have a choice as a general manager, even though he's young in the job, just been on the job a little over a year. He's only 37 years old. And I think that he wanted to get across the understanding that, look, I had an opportunity to trade with Houston at number two and then to trade down to number nine, but the timing really wasn't working out. And you just got the feeling that Houston was a little bit hesitant about it. And he just said, hey, listen, I need to take the bird in the hand. And so then he decided to trade from 1 to 9.
Oh, I think that's a good point. And the candor really and the relationship seemed to really shine through. So to put that all together the way you did makes a lot of sense. Now, what do you think of the return that Poles got for that number one pick?
I think it's probably, if you look at it this way, Layla, if you look at it, instead of getting, trading down and getting the 9th pick and then getting 2 1s and 2 2s, which I think in an ideal world at the start of this is exactly what he wanted. In other words, a 1 in 24 and 25 and a 2 in 23 and either 24 or 25. I think if you substitute the player in there for equal value, look, you're getting a top 20 NFL wide receiver. You're not getting a top 10 NFL wide receiver, but you're getting a top 20 NFL wide receiver in a year that it is vital for Justin Fields to show up and be counted and understand that this is your year. You've now got a representative to good wide receiving core, you know, with Mooney, Claypool, obviously, and more, and then some spare parts in addition to that. And you've got what I would consider a good to very good tight end group with Cole Kmet and Robert Tonyan. So I'm not saying there's no excuses for Justin Fields, but he clearly has a much better chance to succeed. And one other thing about the trade, I think having DJ Moore under contract for 3 years is a significant part of this. And it's not 3 years at a rate of pay that DJ Moore is going to say, I need a new deal, okay, because it averages whatever, $17 million or whatever the number is. He's making significant money. It's not like he can walk in and say, hey, I want a new deal. Now, who knows? If he has 2 really good years, maybe they will work out a new deal and he'll stay, you know, beyond this. But I think it was important to not get a rent-a-player. It was important to get a guy who was going to be on the team as you build this team. And Layla, let me go back and do one thing. I didn't write about this, okay, in my initial story a couple of weeks ago. But the Roquan Smith part of this is fairly significant because even though the Bears would have signed Roquan Smith for in the vicinity of $18 million a year, I think that's been well publicized, even though they would have signed him for that, I think at the end of the day that Ryan Poles believes that it's probably better for the 2025 Chicago Bears that they went younger and they went in free agency for a player that, you know, understand, you just don't know how many more prime years a guy who plays as hard as Roquan Smith does is going to have. So I think that is part of the reason why in letting Roquan Smith go, I don't think that Poles or Matt Eberflus really is having many second thoughts now.
No, and I think you're right. That was mentioned as far as where the Bears even drafted Smith prior when they said that they don't know if they would have drafted an off-ball linebacker as high as the previous regime did. So I think that's an excellent point. Another point that I thought was pretty key that you illustrated in that article was Ryan Poles' relationship with Scott Fitterer and how that caused him to make a trade with him as opposed to Nick Caserio and the Texans. Can you expand on that a little bit and what your takeaways were?
You know, Poles made the point to me that he knew Scott Fitterer pretty well from road scouting over the last few years. And so to explain to people who might not really understand what that means. Okay, so there are times during the course of the fall where Ryan Poles, in part of his duties when he was in Kansas City, he would go to, let's say, Kansas State, Kansas, and Iowa State in the course of 1 week. And many times he would see the same people, you know, on the road. And at the time, Scott Fitterer is a rising star scout with the Seattle Seahawks. So that was one of the guys he would see on the road quite a bit. And when you're on the road doing those things and you're, let's say, in Ames, Iowa on a Wednesday night, and during the day you have been at the Iowa State Cyclones football offices, maybe even studying, who knows, Brock Purdy, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, I don't know. But if you're there, you know, it's pretty natural to basically go back to your hotel, write your report, or, you know, to tell a buddy, hey, you want to get dinner tonight. And so those are the kind of relationships that scouts develop over years. And I think that's the kind of relationship he developed with Scott Fitterer. And it wasn't necessarily that he didn't have high regard for Nick Caserio, but I don't think he had the ability to say to Nick Caserio, Nick, just let's be honest, tell me what you're going to be able to do. Okay. He did have that ability with Scott Fitterer and say, let's not fart around. Let's talk about what you actually can do. And Layla, remember one other thing. Okay. When the Carolina Panthers were looking for a general manager who ended up being Scott Fitterer, David Tepper interviewed and the Panthers interviewed Ryan Poles. And so Ryan Poles had a little bit of institutional knowledge about the Panthers. And I only mean that can be valuable when you're thinking, okay, you know the owner of the Panthers, and I have been saying this all along, okay? David Tepper is an impatient man, and he wanted a quarterback, and he wanted a quarterback now. And so that basically had to be in the back of Ryan Poles' head. It had to be. He knew that not only was Scott Fitterer willing to do this, but he had an owner who was going to be very aggressive in trying to get this done. And I think that's part of what contributed to all this happening.
That was great stuff.
I love Peter King. He's a wonderful person. And it just goes to show you right there, the detail that he puts into his column and why he gets what he gets. Ryan Poles is telling you how the sausage is made in a lot of this. And the familiarity that he had with certain like GM regimes and how that played out.
It's a little steak dinner boom in there.
You
steak
know,
dinner boom. Yep.
There is some steak dinner boom, isn't there?
He was describing it, just the accessibility to people with whom you have better relationships. And it's about, what have we said about the Bears for years at the highest level?
I mean, a lot of stuff.
But they didn't. But not having those connections.
Correct.
Not having those relationships. Not having the kind of thing where you can call somebody and say, hey, let's talk some turkey here.
And what I liked about this so much, and I want to get into this a little bit more tomorrow because I'm filling in for Lawrence tomorrow, is we know that you're going to learn on the job when you're a first-time GM. We know the Bears let their last first-time GM learn on the job. But here's the difference. Ryan Poles is saying, I had the chance to do something historic in this trade. I had the chance to be the dude, right? I showed you who I was when I traded Roquan Smith. I showed you who I am when I made this trade. But instead of trying to go for the big swing and be that guy, make your name, he decided to go with what he knew and what was going to get him in the best spot from point A to B. That's learning. That's growth.
The Roquan Smith stuff is fascinating.
It is.
And am I interpreting it correctly? If they believe Smith is a high motor player who needs to operate physically in a certain degree of health or within a certain percentage of availability, that maybe they envision a potential drop-off potential when he is less than himself? Or did you infer a criticism of his potential work ethic once paid?
I think it had more to do with the comp of the body not lasting past a certain time in that contract based on what they know about how he plays. We saw that guy run his butt off every play.
Yeah, it's just interesting because usually, I mean, if you like a guy like Bobby Wagner has played like that and has had a long career. Inside linebackers, you know, obviously you're talking about great, great inside linebackers, but I would love to know if that's based on data, if it's based on comps, it's something they know about maybe injuries, healing in certain ways that we don't know, that there was might have been risk there that we're not privy to, or if they're questioning his actual motivation, that maybe they just don't think he's going to play hard, which is a huge thing to say about an athlete.
I don't think so. And I referred to what happened previous in the bit where I was interviewing Peter King and asked him the question about noting when Matt Eberflus gave it away a little bit and said on mic in a press conference, we wouldn't draft an off-ball linebacker that high.
Mm-hmm.
So they're telling you their scheme there. So to me, that had something to do with how they saw everything fitting together. That's their system that they put in place.
We have Cody Westerlund standing by to talk about the Bulls. He got to see last night's debacle, disaster. Maybe he can tell us it's not as bad as we thought it was, or maybe this just sort of resets us and reorients us to what we should think about a very flawed Bulls team as they chase whatever they say they're chasing now.
I think we just need to ask him if he thinks they kicked their own butts yesterday like we think they did.
He's next.
Steak dinner. Boom.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And this game is over. Two teams split. The season series 2-2. Philly wins it 116-91.
Do me a favor. Just kick my ass, okay? Kick this ass for a man, that's all.
Let's ask him. Let's ask Cody Westerlund.
Cody Westerlund is joining us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He is on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. He not only covers the Bulls for us, he is the editor for 670thescore.com. Cody, it's one thing in October, December to have a game like that and be like, wow, I don't know, man. Just burn the tape and let's get on to the next one. It's another thing when you've told us that you're in some kind of made-up playoff chase and you need every one you can have and James Harden is out. And then after the game, Billy's like, well, we'll learn from it and grow from it. It's March 23rd.
Yeah, I think on a day yesterday that I think Parkins and Spiegel set the tone for mailing it in. like the Bulls did that. I'm not going to say the media members mailed it in, but we were not grilling Billy, right? We have heard this 1,000 times. We'll learn from this. We got to grow. We got to respond. And that's what happens when you cover a team that's a few games under 500, in this case for the Bulls, four games under 500 now. And you've mentioned earlier in the show how ugly the start was, and the Bulls just really didn't have any fight left after that. And the other thing was, like, Joel Embiid, the Bulls defended him well on Monday night, and then they were trying to give him just as much attention, and he was a willing passer, and the other 76ers stepped up, and it's like the Bulls didn't really have a plan after the first step of get the ball out of Joel Embiid's hands. The rest of these guys, you know, Maxey, Melton attacking the hoop, Tobias Harris, and the Bulls getting out of sorts, and then it's like, you know, they finally beat the Sixers and Joel Embiid on Monday night after all of that. There wasn't much fight left in them, and that does not reflect well upon them whatsoever. I don't think there's much to be gleaned from that game at all, or Billy Donovan's postgame comments, really, about how they need to learn. Like, that's who they've been more this year than they've been the other set of the team that we've seen lately.
And you know Billy well enough, Cody. You're in these press conferences on an incredibly regular basis. When he's offering his truths and when we've heard him, and then on a day like that when I think it was just fairly obvious what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the first couple of possessions of the game, Layla. The 76ers missed a shot. DeMar didn't box anyone out. P.J. Tucker gets the rebound. Sixers hit a three, and then Pat Williams can't in-ball the basketball to Pat Bev. Sorry, I get my Pats mixed up on the Bulls. Turn it over, easy 76ers layups, and then the next three possessions was basically a red carpet to the hoop or a wide-open three for the 76ers and the kickout. So once that happened, like, this Bulls team is not built. They've been better offensively in the last 12 or 13 games since they added Patrick Beverley. Like, the Bulls were, like, top 10 or so since the All-Star break in offensive efficiency, but they're not a team that's built to chase and play from behind. This is a team that's built around being efficient offensively when they can get a lead with that defense. Too many times the Bulls have blown the big lead, but they're not going to chase down a really good team like the 76ers. And make no mistake, this is a championship contender. This team is awesome. I don't know if they'll come out of the East. They could be awesome and lose in the second round of the playoffs and then feel like they need to blow their team up. But they are certainly worthy of winning an NBA title this year if they play at their best. And I thought the 76ers were really close to their best last night. Obviously, they didn't play Joel Embiid in the second half, but they took care of business in the first, so they didn't feel the need to play him. And honestly, in the Bulls matchup, we talked about James Harden being out. That's actually been helpful for the 76ers yes. against the Bulls. He's so bad against the Bulls this year, shooting 8 of 44 on the season in the first three matchups. Had 5 turnovers on Monday. And the Bulls would rather the ball be in his hands than Joel Embiid's hands more. So you could make an argument that no one game, prism of one game, that was actually maybe helpful for the 76ers to regroup a little bit. Obviously, they need him playing at a high level if they're going to win an NBA title. But in these matchups against the Bulls, even dating back to past years, the Bulls have had his number a little bit.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. It was also a case for the plus minus because the Bulls have been in the plus and Harden's been in the minus whenever Harden's been on the floor against them. I think it's the reason that they beat him 2 times in a row in the season. Tobias Harris, too, if you're looking at it from a Sixers standpoint, let's just flip the script and think about it from the contending team standpoint. Yeah. You're right about the secondary options. Like, Tobias Harris had an assertive game. I mean, his line, it proves it. 20 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists. If you have a guy like that on your team, that's how you're getting it done in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, he fits well as the third option, fourth option there, whatever you want to call him on the offensive end. For the 76ers, obviously, his production always hasn't been commensurate with his salary that he's drawn from the 76ers in the past. But you got to feel confident when you're the 76ers. And, like, I like that team a lot. Like, those guards, Maxey and Melton, are so quick in the half court. Melton doesn't always start, obviously, for them. They've mixed up their starting guard rotation a little bit this year when they had Maxey in a six-man role, and now he's back in the starting lineup usually. But those guys are good. And in the playoffs, maybe the Sixers aren't like 10-man deep. But in the playoffs, you really only are going to play 7 or 8 or really trust. And I think you got to like the guys they have there. Harris is part of that. He got going from three-point land last night. Maxey and Melton did too. And that was a big thing, right? Like, the Sixers didn't knock down some open three-pointers on Monday night that could have made a difference. They knocked him down early in this game, hit 16 overall. And again, it gets back to the point where, like, the Bulls can't chase teams like this. That are that good from behind very well when you can't shoot three-pointers. And the Bulls certainly did that very, very poorly again last night, which has also been a theme of the season.
When exactly did DeMar DeRozan get hurt? How hurt is he?
I do not know exactly when he got hurt. He left at 7:48 mark of the third quarter after he got blown by Tyrese Maxey on a drive to the hoop and fouled and had a dead ball in. DeMar didn't speak with reporters after the game. Billy Donovan did not know exactly how he got hurt. His teammates were not exactly sure he got hurt. But he did grimace after that play. So if it was bothering DeMar in the first half, maybe it certainly flared up on that little pivot by him. And look, DeMar's not a good defender. He has not played very good defense most of the year. But he has had problems turning and recovering defensively, I think even more, in these past couple of weeks. If you watch him closely, like, there are times in a semi-transition situation where it's like 3-on-2 or you got to cover ground and get back to someone where it feels like DeMar's like a semi that needs to be turned around because he gets his momentum going one direction and this quad obviously is bothering him and it takes him a long time to turn and recover. And that's very noticeable defensively. So maybe he aggravated on that play. But to me, like, he was already 0 of 7 from the field. I think he probably already felt a little tightness in that quad, in those legs that have slowed him down a little bit in the last couple months, because usually he's usually not 0 of 7. Even when he's shooting poorly, he's not that bad. I mean, that was arguably his worst game in a Bulls uniform for DeMar, so it might have just been bothering him all night. And whenever he talks next, we will certainly be able to ask him.
And I must say, sometimes a two-letter word makes a big difference in there. You needed a second by when you describe he got blown by Tyrese Maxey. Otherwise, I did. The way you gave us a completely different sentence, which good for him, but it happened on the exact same malaprop happened on the Organizations Win Championships podcast by my partner.
That's pretty bad. I can only hope that Shane and Tanny are so drunk that they don't hear it. But
I have bad news. Tanny's already been awake for a while because he thought he had a meeting.
I don't know if we could replay it.
That's my strategy. Malaprop's so terrible that they can't be replayed.
Cody? We've all been there.
I don't think so. I think you may have found safe harbor in that we probably can't replay it.
Well,
but anybody who heard it, we didn't dump it.
There you go. Ray and Tyler, giving the people what they want.
I feel like the Rewind app there, the Odyssey Rewind app. Yep.
You know what? I feel like we've picked up where the Bulls and the Parkins and Spiegel show from yesterday left off. I feel like we're doing this right.
All right, I learned a lot here. No more using that terminology for defense. He got torched off the dribble.
There you go.
I will put that in the arsenal instead.
Yeah, you have to be careful by saying beaten off the dribble. I mean, there's an entire minefield here.
This torched is all Patrick Beverley's fault, Cody, because he was talking about what he doesn't do before games. So Remy's been in the gutter all day.
Yeah, I saw that. We haven't talked to Pat Bev since then. I'm not sure if that will be, again, in the question list for us or not.
Okay, so let's think through this DeMar situation. Say the quad is pretty bad, and I would say, yeah, he pretty much had the worst game he's had as a Bolt. There's no arguing that there. We know why. So do you think he ends up playing against Portland?
I don't know. I mean, Vooch and Zach weren't very concerned, and Zach said that DeMar told him, "I'm going to be all right." Billy did not hear anything about an extended absence. I'm sure it will land somewhere on the questionable realm the first time the injury report comes out, probably later today. And look, DeMar's played through these before the All-Star break when they were struggling, and he had this issue. He sat out a couple games that made sense then with the longer break, but they don't have a lot of wiggle room right now. Obviously a one and a half game lead for the final play-in spot on the Pacers, who hold the tiebreaker over the Bulls as well. So they got to keep that in mind. So I think if DeMar is going to do everything he can to go, if he does sit out a game, I would probably expect it to just be one and maybe a little 3-day respite before the Bulls have that back-to-back in Los Angeles on Sunday and Monday. So like, anytime you're asking me, do you think DeMar DeRozan's going to play the next game when he's a little hurt? My answer is usually yes, you know, because he plays so often.
Makes sense.
Cody Westerlund, thank you so much as always.
Yeah, sorry for making life more difficult.
No,
for you there.
No, it was
you have
great.
Fun.
And I guarantee you, Jason's going to feel better now. He's got such respect for you as a noted journalist and member of the August Bulls media crew.
And that's why Jason's my favorite member of the Bernstein family.
Join the rest of the large and growing club. But thank you, sir. That's Cody Westerlund.
Well played, Cody.
And we mentioned that Patrick Beverley said some things. And there's a long and ancient history of this canard about sports and abstinence.
But here's the plot twist. Men are not the only ones who have thought about this. Maybe it's because I've been influenced by sports, but we're going to parse it through on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
All right, we got to talk this through now because Patrick Beverley shared some intimate details of his professional life on his podcast about what he does and specifically does not do before a game.
So I don't have sex night before games.
Of course not.
You know, like,
you don't want to have
wifey,
fresh
know.
Legs. You
yeah,
know.
I want to have fresh. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Yeah. So, but like,
but there's players.
Wifey gonna kill me though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this goes back, this idea of abstinence before an athletic event is, from what I can tell, the earliest examples that I've been able to find, the Roman Empire. This goes back to...
It always goes back to them.
To a philosopher, Philostratus. In what sense are they men, those who exchange crowns and victory announcements for disgraceful pleasures? And everyone knows that Burgess Meredith's Mickey in Rocky, women weaken legs. That's an ancient, I mean, the whole boxing thing that you and Mike Tyson used to talk
your
about.
Your legs, like, weakened your legs.
Yeah, the fact is, it's not true. We know scientifically, it's this idea of like building up your precious virility.
Have I been too influenced by sports? Because I thought about this in like personal life. I'm like, oh, the night before a big job interview, especially when I was married or in a relationship, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't.
Why?
Because I got influenced by sports, Dan.
Like you wouldn't be on your game and you'd be weak somehow because your vitality had been removed from you by the evil succubus?
Yeah, I mean, at the time it was just my ex-husband.
What's the male counterpart of succubus? I got to look that up.
I don't know. I just called him by his first name. But when it came...
Narcissist.
Yeah. Well, that happens to all of us. But the point being...
Incubus. Excuse me.
I love that band.
Succubus and Incubus is the male version of a succubus.
Well, I love their albums and frankly think they put on a great show. However, well, that doesn't really help my argument. No, does it? But I've thought about this because I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's the same. Like, maybe it's just the act in general. Like, maybe you shouldn't do that before, like, major life events, you know?
I should do whatever you possibly have the chance.
I appreciate Pat Beverly on his Living the Dream tour, where we all just listen to him all the time, and he's from here, and he gets to be himself, and everybody loves it. Like, this is fantastic.
How long has he been married?
I don't know.
I mean, like, come on, man. Like, you don't, what? It's not up to you. I mean, sometimes if you have the chance, don't waste it. Who cares? You got a game the next day.
I think
they protected Brady. No sex in the game for the Bears.
I don't. Something tells me a lot of dudes who play in the NBA don't have that problem. But you bring up a good point.
I mean, and there's also there isn't some finite amount of your vitalness that goes away. It's like, well, you've given that up now. You've surrendered that part of yourself, and now you will not be victorious in war. It's just not true.
But of course you think about it, right? Like, you've thought about it. I've thought about it. I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't, you know, do that before, like, a big day of work or something. Like, hasn't been an issue as recently.
This texter says Ronda Rousey did an interview with Conan O'Brien, says the reverse is true for her. She believes it powered her up before a fight. Well, what was Holly Holm doing?
Ronda Rousey kicks butt in whatever she was doing, and she probably powered up before then.
She kicked butt until someone else just kicked her in the face a bunch of times and turned her into hamburger.
I mean, she lost. Yeah, that happened. But point being, I think Ronda Rousey overrode the rule here. Giggle.
I just think it doesn't matter. It does. Do whatever you want. Do whatever makes it. Just don't waste your chances, man. Don't waste your chances.
Cherish it.
You don't get that day back.
At some point, Patrick Beverly is going to have to speak to us about a lot of different things in life, not just on his podcast, but that's pretty great.
I also do think that the truth to it for boxers, as it was explained to me, when trainers would say it to boxers, it was more about the lifestyle. If somebody wasn't married, if getting it the night before the fight, it wasn't about the act. It was about the going out to a bar or a club and drinking and smoking cigars or whatever they did back in the old wild days. It was more about get a good night's sleep and be ready to fight and don't be out, you know, with all of your boozing and womanizing the night before a fight.
What? How about you give us your order?
Get out of here! Don't you ever interrupt me while I'm conducting business. Move your little chicken ass. Listen, kid, you lay off that pet shop game. Women weaken legs.
And don't listen to the Pet Shop Boys either, especially West End Girls. What? I don't know.
It's a great song.
I know, I'm kidding. You lay off that Pet Shop Dame. But I do love the Pet Shop Boys.
If it's about sleep, that's a totally different conversation.
I think that's got to be part of it, or else it evolved into that. That maybe you were worried about a fighter that lived the life that you knew a night before a fight might be out until 4 a.m. It's sort of like the way Red Auerbach invented the shoot around, which wasn't necessarily
proof of life.
Right. The shoot around was like, who's on the bus at 9:30 a.m., how do you look? And he gives everybody the once over. And it wasn't, we have to go to the arena and get the shooting sight lines and walk through our stuff. It was more, I'm the coach and I need your, I want you, rousted out of bed earlier than otherwise.
I think this is one of those situations where it's been so discussed and so obeyed that it's become something that we should probably try to figure out again with science. The NBA is ahead of the game when it comes to sleep. And aren't they the kings of trying to figure out this stuff?
Yeah, someone said there's a sports science show did it and debunked it. And that there was an experiment who said that it had a positive effect. Spike TV sports science show in the late 2000s.
The real issue here is the sleep. Like, okay, say you get eight hours of sleep. What happens then? Are you fine? Are you not fine? That's the question. Or what happens if you do that and you get 8 hours of sleep and you're Patrick Beverley and you don't normally? Do you then psych yourself out because you broke your rule?
I don't know. This is some of the responses that are coming in.
The text line is on fire. Appropriately so. We appreciate it. 708 with the obvious observation. Didn't Wilt Chamberlain debunk it?
Yeah. Well, but he didn't win a title until 1971, right?
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying, maybe it prevented him from winning other titles.
See, you can't help it. You've been influenced by sports. We don't really know.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, that's true. In Bull Durham, Nuke was admonished for leaving his fastball in the locker room. That was with Millie, right? That was at the very beginning.
That, to me, was the that was like when it started to become publicly discussed, don't you think?
I don't know. It's always been boxing. It's forever. It's been boxing. That's why, as stereotypical a boxing trainer as Mickey was. What's his last name? Was it Cohen? What was it? Was Mickey's last name? Because he started out as an Irishman and then they made him Jewish. I never figured out how that happened. Because I thought it was obvious that he was sort of a crusty old Irishman and that he's dead and everybody's got yarmulkes on. Like, what? When did this happen? Maybe he converted. Maybe just later in life, in between the two movies, he was just inspired.
I think that works. I don't know. Why are we making so many Rocky references this week? It just seems to be.
We always do.
Seems to be canon. Part of the discussion today. But I did think about the reason it got brought up was, and what made me laugh about it was Dan was like, well, you never hear women saying this.
You
and
don't.
I'm like,
it's
no,
only-
I've 100% thought about this.
But you never.
But I'm not an athlete, so that's the difference here.
Yeah, but it's all. But it's not part of the lore of women's sports as much as it is men's sports. This idea of
that we know of, they haven't talked about.
If you give yourself over to the fairer sex, it makes you weak. Or if something's taken from you, it really is the succubus myth. It's this idea of, if you give yourself. And then it saps your energy or your manliness.
I always thought it had to do more with like pent up anger or something or stress.
Maybe.
And turning that energy into something. Yeah, starting pitchers are famous for this, I thought.
The 847 says the boxers fighting what, maybe every couple of months? It's baseball 6 nights a week.
Well, if you're a starting pitcher, it's every 5 days. That to me was always pretty discussed widely. Like that was more popular of a discussion. But I've definitely thought like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But I doesn't it also make you not focus if, like you said, you had the chance to do that and then you didn't? Would you be lamenting it later?
Yeah, then maybe you're capable of being more distracted by whatever little shiny, scantily clad objects are in your orbit that day. I just think it sort of maybe puts you in a zen state where you're like, okay, you checked that box. That is when in an appetite that doesn't need to be ministered to at that point.
Okay, so you're going to give Cody Westerlund a mess for what happened in the previous segment. You're not going to pause and laugh at yourself just now. See, that's all I'm trying to say here. I think sports has influenced everybody, but it really comes down to individual decisions. But I wonder if Patrick Beverley, if it happened, would he feel like worse because he disobeyed his rule?
If it's a superstition, if it's like your own personal superstition, then that's just another sports thing. That's just like a batter tapping the plate in the same way every time, right?
Just another sports thing.
Well, I guess, but man, it just, and thank you to the texter who does say that for all the married people out there, just don't turn down an opportunity for some stupid reason like this. Just, I mean, chances are, it's not all the time that you get a, opportunity.
Married advice to Patrick Beverley?
Yeah,
is that where we went with this?
Come on. Yeah. I mean, don't let that go by because, you know, you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. And then as the bus is bearing down on you, you're thinking, you know, I really should have done that last night. Boom. Dead.
See, it all just becomes a distraction. So maybe the key is to not think about it at all. What are you laughing at?
Why do boxers not have sex the night before a fight? Because they probably don't like each other that much. I've never heard that. That's great.
Winner.
How have I never heard that joke before?
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's so good. Damn, I've gone in my entire life not knowing that joke?
It might have just been made up by 815 just now.
I'm sure not. I'm sure that goes back to the vaudeville.
We got some pretty funny texters. I don't put it past them. So I don't know that we solved anything here. Be true to yourself.
What does that mean?
Exactly. I think we should talk college basketball next.
Yeah, definitely. Tim Doyle is very excited about everything, especially college basketball. He's got picks. He's got thoughts. He's got brackets. And
his bracket is for the world to see, and we have some questions about it, don't we? You do.
Well, you got to pick upsets.
I mean, there's an upset on here that is bold.
So he's going to tell us all about today's games and what to look for this weekend. Next on The Score.
Women, weaken legs.